There's crispy. And then there's crispy-er. Try our new and improved Tyson Crispy Chicken Strips. Crispy just got crispy-er.
It's the Monday edition of College Football Live, an edition so large that we needed four faces on your screen. Matt Schick along with Greg McElroy, Mike Golic Jr., and Dusty Dvorak. It is week one, but we already have a pair of games in our rearview mirror. Let's start with what we saw in Orlando. It was at times good, bad, and ugly. Saturday night with Florida taking down Miami 24-20. The Gators won the game despite being -3 in turnover margin, but had 10 sacks, most in an SEC game in the last 10 seasons. Felipe Franks with two touchdown passes and two picks. After the teams played, the coaches spoke.
What atmosphere? College football is back. This is the best. Do it. Hell of a job by Miami. Manny, you can see what he's going to be as a head coach and how he's going to get his guys to play. I love our guys. You know, I mean, you had some veteran guys not flinch. We made a lot of mistakes, a lot of things we can coach off of and clean up. And we found a way to win, which was fantastic. I'm really proud of our guys.
I thought our guys played with a lot of courage. I thought they played with a lot of effort. But it doesn't matter because we lost a game. We did not come here to play with courage and effort. We came here to win the game. And it's not okay at the University of Miami ever to lose to the University of Florida. And everybody in that locker room feels the pain of that right now.
Well, Florida is now 22-0 in season openers when ranked in the top 10. I know it's the first game, but G-Mac, we'll start with you. What did we learn here?
We learned that Florida has a long way to go offensively to consider themselves a legitimate contender to Georgia in the SEC East. And they had high hopes, I think, heading into the season of maybe taking the next step after what was a 10-win performance last year. But we saw a lot of inconsistencies along the offensive line. I thought Felipe Franks actually regressed from what he displayed down the stretch last year and still didn't showcase the maturity that you wanted to see from him as he heads into yet year number three as a starter. So Florida has an awful lot to figure out here in the next 2 weeks. Look, they can still achieve an awful lot, but if they play anywhere near like they played last week, that's an 8-win football team, maybe at best.
Yeah, I'm with you, Greg. I think unfortunately, Florida still feels like a quarterback away, and that's really been the case since Will Grier had that suspension during his time with the Gators. And so if that doesn't get remedied in a hurry, you're wasting potentially a championship-caliber defense. And on the other side for Miami, too much newness all at once. Obviously, Manny Diaz was a familiar face, but in a different role. Dan Enos goes from quarterback coach at Alabama to coordinator and play caller at Miami. And so all of these things, along with Jaren Williams, along with youth on the offensive line, made for a difficult outing, but one they can still recover from and definitely win the Coastal in the ACC.
Yeah, I echo you guys' sentiments, especially on Franks. I mean, I didn't see the consistency that I wanted to see, especially late in the game. That was an awful pick. Just ask Steve Spurrier. Right. The look on his face, I think, told the story. And you expect the guy in year two with Dan Mullen, a quarterback guru. We saw the progression last year. I expect him to take that next step. I didn't see that the other night. So I think there's real questions there. What is the ceiling for this Florida football team with Franks at the helm? For Miami, I'm more encouraged, even though they lost. Two freshman offensive tackles. Look, they got worked, and they got they got to fix that. But a freshman quarterback, a new coach, all that newness – and they still almost won the football game. So I think that as the season progresses, help those offensive tackles out a little bit. I think Miami's probably a little bit better than what I anticipated to start the year.
Yeah, 10 sacks. They were +3 in turnovers and still were right there at the end. So maybe something to build off of. You guys were mentioning about Florida, the doubts there, the quarterback position, and what have you. I know, I understand it's tough to draw too many conclusions from a week zero game, the first game of the season. But from what you saw, is Florida still the greatest challenge to Georgia in the SEC East, Greg?
They weren't for me coming into the season because I had questions about Felipe Franks. And I don't care who you are. Last year when Florida got into a tough spot, they said, you know what, we're going to run the football behind this offensive line, the right side in particular. And that right side's departed. By the way, four out of your five offensive linemen were gone. And the offensive line last night, or on Saturday night, was brutal. It really was. So I thought defensively, I was cautiously optimistic about the personnel they might be replacing it with. I was blown away. I thought they played great on the defensive side. The pass rush looked strong. The secondary coverage was solid. A lot to be encouraged with what they did on the defensive side. But offensively, I never really bought into the progress that they supposedly made last year. The team in the East that I'd be most concerned about if I'm Georgia would be the Missouri Tigers. It still would be, especially knowing the Gators' schedule in the weeks to come.
Yeah, you saw the Florida Gators at the tail end of last season. Felipe Franks certainly made a jump, but you can look at the schedule. South Carolina, Idaho, one of the worst Florida State teams we've ever seen, and then the bowl game against an unmotivated and depleted injury-riddled Michigan team. Let's go to the ACC here. Let's go to Miami. Mike, begin with you on this, then anyone else can jump in. We know it's Clemson and everybody else. There's a gap, at least. Maybe Syracuse, that second team. Where does Miami fit into the ACC?
I think on the coastal side, listen, it's been a grab bag each and every year of who's going to represent that side of the conference. And I think for Miami, you're still dealing with the most talented defense on that side of the conference. You're still dealing with a team that I think can make strides already in game one. I'm with Dusty. I saw enough out of an offense last year that was so stagnant that did nothing to help and put these players in a position to succeed. DJ Dallas looks strong in that opening one. Brevin Jordan at tight end is going to be an unbelievable weapon. And I think they're going to do enough and get enough from that defense in the turnover column to absolutely represent that side of the division in the ACC.
Dusty?
I like the U, but I'm going to tell you what, I think Virginia's legit. Let's go with the two Bryces, right? Bryce Perkins, a quarterback who no one's talking about, highly productive guy, and Bryce Hall, one of the better cornerbacks in all of college football. Bronco Mendenhall has consistently gotten better and better and better. They're knocking on the door last year, eight starters back defensively, and a legitimate quarterback. I think Miami's right there, but if I got to make a pick today, it'll be the same one I made before the season. I like Virginia winning the Coastal.
All right. And,
it's funny how in a losing effort, we can come away thinking, oh, Florida stinks and Miami, they're pretty good. How is that possible in today's day and age? But if you look at the road that Florida has to play against versus what Miami has to go through, I tell you what, guys, I think I might be leaning Hurricanes in the Coastal because, like you, Dusty, I was on Virginia. I was on the Virginia bandwagon. I was absolutely buying the Wahoos. But after Saturday and looking how that freshman quarterback performed, how they were able to move the ball at times, and how they played defense, I'm cautiously optimistic about what Miami might do this season.
Well, Miami,
at the very least, Jerry Williams is tough, right? I mean, he got beat up quite a bit. So for him to continue to get up and make plays, that showed me a bunch.
Well, Miami looked rusty. That's pretty obvious. Teams will in week one. But they looked shiny at some points as well. You saw that new turnover chain that they unveiled. There's a lot of hype going in. You got the 305 hanging down there. You got to like the new addition, right? 305, it's the area code. Also the weight of one of the guys that wore it, Mike.
I love it. Listen, you keep finding ways to outdo yourself with the turnover chain, and then why not throw some four-finger rings in on top of it? The touchdown rings now for these guys. You know what? It works for them, and Manny Diaz is a guy that understands Miami as well as anyone, clearly.
All right, so the
touchdown. Right.
Go ahead, Dusty.
I was just say Miami embraces that culture, right? Manny Diaz has brought that there. They embrace it. So offensive guys are like, dude, you guys get to wear a chain. At least get me some jewelry. So I thought that was a nice little touch that the new head coach added to the offense.
I just like the fact that the chain has gotten so outrageously large. It's actually supplementing for their squat workouts that they have to do on Sundays and Mondays. You know, it's just standard little extra work in the weight room. No, not necessary anymore. You just got to throw the chain on a couple times. Hey, we're as strong as ever. If they have as many turnovers in the weeks to come as they did on Saturday, that defense could be really strong, especially in their back, their neck, and their legs area carrying all that extra weight.
Yeah, it's a little trick there from the coaches. You get rewarded, and you're also doing work as you're rewarded as well. We got much more to cover here on College Football Live. It was a sloppy game in Orlando. Fun finish, though, in Hawaii. It ended the way seven of Arizona's games ended last season with a loss. What do we take away from the Wildcats' woes? That's coming up. The top-ranked reigning national champion Clemson Tigers are in action coming up this weekend, kicking off their season against Georgia Tech Thursday at 8 Eastern. only on ACC Network. Visit GetACCN.com to check for providers in your area. If you don't see your provider listed, contact them to demand they carry ACC Network. Don't take no for an answer. No was the answer to the question of, will Arizona avoid back-to-back season opening losses? 45-38, the final. Khalil Tate passed for 300, rushed for 100, and came up just 1 yard shy of tying the game on a mad scramble late. It was a big win for head coach Nick Rolovich and his club in Hawaii, who tweeted after the game, "Mahalo," which I believe translates to, "How dare you pick us? That wasn't very smart of you." The game day guy's picking Arizona. Lee Corso, you can see, hanging his head in shame there as well. Dusty, what do you take away here from this Arizona loss to Hawaii?
Not just a big day for Hawaii, but a big day for fat guys everywhere. Us defensive linemen. Manly Williams made us proud. You know what I mean? In the summertime, what do? You hold up four fingers and you say what? You say finish. Finish the play. Watch my big guy from the stack all the way down the field. Never gives up on the play. The effort is outstanding, and it's all about finishing the football game. He makes the hit at the one-yard line. If it weren't for the big man giving max effort, Khalil Tate may have scored, and who knows what happened. So, huge day for defensive linemen everywhere. Thank you, Manly Williams.
I understand we're usually on opposite sides of the fence, but we can all come together for big people doing great things in the name of football. And this is a moment to celebrate for everyone here. I am just so proud of this large man for balling out and stopping. Listen, Khalil Tate's going to be one of the most exciting players in college football all season. Arizona is going to be the ultimate trap game for a lot of these teams in the Pac-12 that are contenders, especially come October and November. But, man, that was fun to watch.
It was crazy. I remember sitting there, and it's about 1 in the morning, so I'm, like, exhausted. I'm like, I got to watch the rest of it. Next thing you know, Khalil Tate gets out. Oh, there he goes. I'm standing on the couch. And next thing you know, he's tackled. It's like, oh, my goodness. It was like the Tennessee Titans in the Super Bowl against the Rams, stopped on the one-yard line. Who got him? What number was that? Is that a D lineman? Did I see that correctly? He just chased down Khalil Tate. Hey, great effort, great hustle, and good job, Dusty, by saluting the big man in the trenches.
Well, it's that's the least shocking news of the day is Dusty doing that one there. But it is year two under Kevin Sumlin, and they open up with a loss. Mike, what does this loss mean for Sumlin and Zona?
It means that going on the road to Hawaii in week zero is a really hard thing to do with all the travel considerations in that. It means that this is a really talented and exciting team yet again, and Khalil Tate's going to be a guy that we all love watching. But ultimately, they're a trap game and not a contender when it comes to the Pac-12. This is a three-team race for this conference's viability in the college football playoff. But Arizona is going to be that team that, if you're not ready and if you're looking ahead to the next game, can absolutely have the talent and ability to snake bite you.
What I'm having a hard time figuring out is why Khalil Tate still, in 2019, looks uncomfortable. Look, I understand last year he wasn't 100%, and he's never going to be a real accurate thrower. It's just not who he is. Yeah, and you look at the numbers, and you get enamored with the box score, 360, 100-plus rushing, all that stuff's great. But he missed some gimmies. I mean, there's some wide-open guys out in the left flat that he passed on. There were a couple decisions when he should have run, he decided to throw it and was inaccurate with the football. Threw a couple picks. It just, for whatever reason, he still doesn't look comfortable in Noel Mazzoni's offense and Kevin Sumlin as his head coach. They just haven't quite figured out the best way to use him. Yeah, he got some points. Yeah, he scored a bunch as well. And the defense still has their problems. But I just want to see Khalil Tate just one more time, or at least for an extended part of the season, on a look and resemble the Khalil Tate from 2017, when he was probably the most electrifying player in college football down the stretch.
It was like he was a video game type player. But listen, this is problematic for me, fellas, because they had six turnovers they created. Tell me the last time a team created six takeaways and lost a football game. I know they had to go far away, and it's not easy to play Hawaii, and that's a pretty good Hawaii team. They benched their quarterback in this game. The backup came in and got it done. So I don't look at this game so much as on Khalil Tate or the offense. That defense had some real problems giving up big plays. But then also with that, when you get six takeaways and you can't come out with a victory, that's a problem overall, and for me, that's on the head coach. Turnover margin, the number one stat in football. You get six takeaways and you lose to a team that you need to beat. That's a bad loss for Kevin Sumlin and this Wildcat team.
Well, it's the fourth time in six road games under Kevin Sumlin that the Wildcats entered the second quarter with a double-digit deficit. So these things need to get fixed. By the way, Cedric Bird, the second for Hawaii, was outstanding. Got to give him some love. 14 grabs, yeah. 224 yards, four touchdowns for Hawaii. So, Greg, this was a good upgrade for week zero. No offense to, you know, BYU, Portland State in years past for week zero. But how would you evaluate the quality of what we saw in week zero?
Beggars can't be choosers. Like, I'm so frustrated with all the negativity that surrounded these week zero games. Yeah, did the teams look great? No. Were they completely dialed in? Absolutely not. Will they look better in November? Of course. But the fact is, we had college football on television last Saturday, and all we seem to hear about is, oh, week zero was a mistake. Really? Because last time I checked, there were over 5 million people that watched the game between Miami and Florida. What else do you want to watch? Dodgers-Yankees? I mean, give me a break, man. That was highly entertaining football. Now, was it super good in regards to quality? No. Was it sloppy? Of course. But it gives you a point where you know you can go up from where they were. So I loved it. I thought it was perfectly imperfect. And that's what I want to continue. I want week zero to take a little bit bigger place on the calendar in the years to come. But I don't want to see big primetime games and primetime teams. I want to see the group of five highlighted and really showcased in that week zero matchups.
Yeah, that being said, listen, having the Power 5 names involved, is, I think, is why you saw the big numbers. You had a brand name matchup of two dynamic Florida schools going on in this. And I'll tell you what, for all the slander for week zero, if you move that game back a week, guess who's not playing any better? Either of those teams. None of the things that we saw are going to be erased with a week's more of practice. None of the young O-lines on either side. None of the newness of the head coaches and coordinators. None of that gets better in a week's time in camp. It gets better when you get to real game action. We got to it sooner, and we got to it bigger and better than ever before.
It was the highest rated college football game for ESPN. Sorry, Dusty. Highest rated college football game for ESPN since 2016. Dusty, I'll let you jump in here. Week zero, week one, same number of practices. I mean, whether you get rid of week zero and move to week one and have these guys, they still started practice early.
Yeah, I'm with Mike on that. Look, I don't think that had anything to do with it. There's going to be turnovers. There's going to be penalties, sloppy play. There's a preseason in the NFL. There's not in college, right? So we just have to expect that's going to happen. I thought it was a beautiful disaster, right? Because what did we see? All the things you guys said. We saw turnovers. We saw sloppy football. But you know what I love? I love competition, man. I saw great competition. I saw a rivalry matchup that came down to the final possession. I saw another game that came down to for 1 yard for it maybe going to overtime. So we can complain about a lot of stuff. It's what we do in 2019. But at the end of the day, we got highly competitive football, and football's back, man. I'll take it any day of the week.
No question. The difference between last Saturday and this upcoming Saturday is when the play is really, really bad this upcoming Saturday, you have other options. Like, for instance, if Boise State and Florida State, it's not an appetizing matchup for you, okay, perfect. You just switch right on over to Auburn and Oregon. If you don't like what you're seeing from Memphis and Ole Miss, no problem. Let's go see what South Alabama and Nebraska are doing. Like, you're going to have other options this upcoming Saturday. So week zero, week one, doesn't matter. Football, for the most part, at this point of the season, is pretty dang ugly. All right? Just come to terms with it. At least now, moving forward, we have some excitement in late August to look forward to. And that offseason is just a little bit shorter, which I think we can all celebrate.
And it was very smart of you, Greg, to note, I think every game you mentioned was on the ESPN Family and Network. So very well done here on College Football Live on this Monday edition. Much more to get to. Week one means we're learning more quarterbacking decisions, including at UCF. Can Brandon Wimbush keep the night train going in Orlando?
Is about the commitment to everyone being the very best that they can be on and off the field.
Our young men need real work experience. They need to know that they can enter the marketplace the same way they enter the stadium. I'm going to make an impact in the stadium. I'm going to make an impact at Adobe.
A lot of people don't know this about me. People see me as a football player, an athlete. I'm an artist.
I could do something real quick. I'm just doing a little sketch. Man, that was an amazing experience.
We provide our young men with real world experience.
Hey, we're about to head to Bangkok, Thailand.
Just seeing the joy on kids' faces, you have no idea how much you're impacting.
It gave me a sense of, you know, service is really powerful because it's not just you impacting them, how much the experience can actually serve you.
This right here, from any natty bowl game experience, bro. We just swam in a river with elephants. Brought that around your mind. Like, I came to the Clemson to play football, and I just swam with elephants. Boy, I mean,
it's a journey, baby. It's called journey, baby. We worldwide.
All in, the Clemson football family goes all access with Dabo Swinney and the Clemson Tigers. New episodes debut Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday night at 9 Eastern, only on ACC Network. And then on Thursday night, Clemson will take the field against Georgia Tech. A few other ranked teams in action, including number 17, UCF, facing Florida A&M. Greg, we'll start with you. This is a UCF program that is 25-1 over the last two seasons. Notre Dame transfer quarterback Brandon Wimbush is the starter. Is he going to keep this program rolling?
You have to hope, but in order for this program to look anything like they did over the last two seasons, he's going to have to be great, Brandon Wimbush, because there's one thing that we've learned in watching him play at Notre Dame. There were some really, really high highs, but there were also some really low lows. He's kind of like a roller coaster. He's a very streaky player, but when he gets going, he can create on his own. Now, he's not going to be Mackenzie Milton, who was sensational over the last couple years. So glad that his recovery is going according to plan. But he can be a steadying force. He's a veteran player that's been thrust into a difficult situation because of injury. And if he resembles that of the good Brandon Wimbush that we saw at times throughout his career in South Bend, then this UCF team can find their way back to the New Year's Six.
Yeah, I think he's going to be in a really good spot. And what I like is the offensive coordinator, Jeff Lebby, who's working with him as the quarterback's coach. They've already worked on changing his throwing motion, really worked on the mechanics. Josh Heupel is going to have an offense that's going to put him in great situations. And let's face it, UCF has got some talent at the skill spot. Adrian Killen's one of the fastest guys in college football. They've got outstanding receivers outside. And I think this offense is going to continue to roll. The question I kind of have is UCF defensively, they took a little step back last year, lost some more talent. Can that side of the football hold up? I think offensively, they're going to be fine. Defensively, that's the question I have more so if they're going to be able to get back to a New Year's Six type game.
Brandon Wimbush in his best year as a starter at Notre Dame was under a 50% passer. It was a borderline triple option offense that they ran, but they ran it to the tune of over 300 yards a game. This team in UCF, between their two quarterbacks last year, had 600-yard rushing and a 1,000-yard running back in Greg McCray, who's back this season. Brandon Wimbush is going to rush for over 1,000 yards if they do things right in this offense. And if you get away from the pressure cooker, listen, there's just something different about being the quarterback at Notre Dame and the pressure cooker they were under the last couple of years. We've seen there have been a lot of difficulties for quarterbacks going year to year in Brian Kelly's offense and what it entails in South Bend. I think a fresh start for Brandon, coupled with being one of the most gifted running quarterbacks college football has, is going to make for a great fit.
Well, UCF is certainly a well-oiled machine. They have scored 30 or more points in 26 consecutive games. That is the longest streak in the AP poll era. Let's stay in the Sunshine State. Let's go to Tallahassee, where Florida State has named James Blackman the starting quarterback, beating out Wisconsin transfer Alex Hornibrook. Remember, he was thrown into the fire a couple of years ago. You had DeAndre Francois go down to an injury in that first game against Alabama. And then Blackman got the job, then lost it last year, only had one start. You see this graphic with the recruiting class rankings and what he was able to do in that one start last season. But he did get the starting job back. That is proof that not all quarterbacks that lose the job go on to transfer. He hung tough, hung in there. The question, though, is after a losing season last year, Greg, is Florida State going bowling this year?
Well, I like James Blackman's upside. The unfortunate thing is 2 years ago, he was thrust into a situation where he wasn't ready. He was 6'4", 6'5", and 175 pounds. And that's just not the physique that you need to endure what is a 12-game regular season in college football. But there were some real nice highlights throughout the course of his true freshman year. He was supposed to redshirt. He was supposed to be the third string guy. DeAndre Francois gets hurt. One guy gets kicked off the team, and he's thrust into what was an impossible spot behind a very leaky offensive line. It's going to really come down to whether or not James Blackman and this offense can get going. I expect the defense to be solid. They still have athletes on that side of the football. They still have talent on the defensive side of the football, especially with the way they've recruited. But Kendall Briles, the new offensive coordinator for Florida State, he's really tasked with jump-starting this offense. He's going to simplify things. He's going to put the onus on the skill positions while still continuing to hold the run game in high regard. So I'm optimistic about Florida State, but they have to come out of the gate strong against Boise, and that's a very capable Group of Five opponent.
Yep, and a Boise State team who's going to start a true freshman quarterback, and so that Florida State defense will have a chance to help. No surprise here, I'm going to focus on the offensive line. It was dreadful for Florida State last season. And usually you can say, well, you had a bunch of young guys that went in there, they got experience, and experience is the mother of all currency on the offensive line. Not necessarily, but in this case, because you get Kendall Briles coming over, and that also means a new offensive line coach and Randy Clements. And I think some of that newness, a new approach, and really putting last year in the rearview mirror as quickly as they can, a combination of injury, poor recruiting at that position that have all been erased. They've built up competitive depth at that spot. If they can manage to stay healthy in a way that was impossible for them last year, there's nowhere to go but up at that position. And starting at 5-7 as your base from last year, I think they're absolutely a bowl team this season.
They're going bowling, man. I mean, look, first time in 36 years they didn't make it. That's a rough start for Willie Taggart. They're going up. They have too much talent to be a sub-500 football team. I think James Blackman will be better than he was as a true freshman. Remember, he started a game last year against NC State, put up good numbers, over 400 yards, four touchdowns, just one interception. I think what Golic said is 100% right. The biggest problem with this football team last season was their offensive line. It was abysmal. It has to be better. How about get Cam Akers going, a very talented running back that they have? That's going to help Blackman. That's going to help this offense quite a bit. The defense will be strong enough, and I do like Kendall Briles coming over. And the thing about Kendall Briles, going back to Baylor or his time at Florida Atlantic, it's a run-first offense. They spread the field. They get outside the numbers of their receivers, but it's power football between the tackles. My guess is that's where Florida State wants to get back to, and they will get back to a bowl game.
Hard to believe we're asking the question about Florida State. Will they go to a bowl game? First time in, 40 years that they finished with a losing record last year. By the way, 7 Eastern Saturday night, Florida State, Boise State on ESPN. Greg McElroy, part of that call. Florida State used to run the ACC, and now that goes through Clemson. Their quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, idolized Peyton Manning, got to spend some offseason time with one of the all-time greats.
The craziest thing that happened, we're going to play Tulane down in New Orleans. Well, usually when we land, there'll be 3 or 4 buses over there for us. And we'll go get on those buses that take us to the hotel. Well, we land, there's no buses. Now, we've never had this happen. We called the bus station down there and said, they picked up another Florida team. Central Florida was playing one of the Louisiana schools about 30 miles outside of New Orleans, and they landed. And the bus driver asked, are y'all the team from Florida? His coach said yes. So he took them, and we had on the buses. We were about 2 hours late getting to the hotel. Guess who got the hotel rooms? Guess who had our rooms? Central Florida had our rooms, man. And by the way, we were supposed to win. We were favored. We got upset that day by Tulane.
The PlayStation Player Impact Rating is an objective evaluation of everyone at the highest level of college football. For each player, we compare how successful his team is when he's on the field versus when he's off it, accounting for his teammates and opponents using advanced statistical models. Every player on the field gets credit for each play, regardless of whether they touch the ball or make a tackle, and we scale the result by position to get a 0 to 100 rating. The PlayStation Player Impact Rating shows who's excelling on all parts of the field.
Thank you, Brad Edwards. Now a look at today's PlayStation Player Impact Rating, taking a look at Trevor Lawrence, who enters the season at 95 overall, the third highest returning quarterback in the FBS. He came the full-time starter right before week 5 last season. Clemson's QBR was raised nearly 40 points when Lawrence was on the field versus when he was off the field. This offseason, he got to spend with a player who would have rated very high in the PlayStation Impact Rating, Peyton Manning.
Cannot stop the tide. You can only safely save people from the flood. I think Trevor Lawrence's job tonight is to save the Tigers from the flood, but he's a year too soon, a year too early.
Ready? 3, 2, 1.
Oh. How long have you been growing out your hair?
I've been growing it out since like 5 years, but I get it cut every once in a while.
I went to the Manning camp this year. We coach the kids out there.
Hey, Trevor, how old are you?
19.
There's guys in my group that are 16, 17.
How old are you? 16.
I'm like, I'm only 19.
All right, so we're going to do the quick fade. So we're doing quick game footwork. So it's just one step. You're going to put some air and lead them up the field. So you want to aim them up field a little bit. There you go. Good shot. Good shot.
They kind of give us full control. Like, we'll have our own station and we'll run our own drills and do all that.
So you want it like that so you can run under it, all right? There you go. Yeah, you want to act like there's a defender right on his back, so you want to drop it over his shoulder. Try to get that elbow up a little bit and lead that throw. You want to drop it like over this shoulder, so this outside shoulder. That's the air, the shot.
Do you happen to know the girl-to-boy ratio at Clemson?
I have no idea.
Well, how are the girls?
All right, I have a girlfriend from back home, so I don't
know. So you can't really look, huh?
Yeah, I mean, but they're every school's got attractive girls, so it don't matter where you go.
I see a lot of fast guys that don't throw well on the run.
The Mannings will kind of come around and help out. Peyton Manning's been a guy that I've watched growing up, my favorite player. I mean, he was a freshman starter when he was at Tennessee. Kind of low maintenance.
Throw it into the ground.
Total control. Knows what's going on. I want to be more like that.
Hey, get that shoulder turn, because when you try to do it all at once, that's where you have all that air. Feels like you got a kill to put him on him. Easy, nice throw right in his chest, all right? Make it easy on him.
You're standing back there, kind of waiting. You're waiting. It's on you. You're on your time, so waiting to say hunt, and you're kind of looking around. You're like, man, this is real. You know, just relaxed. Thinking about we're on this huge stage playing a national championship against who people say the best team ever is in Alabama that year.
Y'all good on the route? Have y'all run a bang eight?
We had practiced this play all season.
It's like a post, but we're putting it on you.
Knew this was going to be a good play against them.
All right, so y'all run 10 yards. So it's just 10 yards. And we're putting it on you right here, all right?
Guy almost hits me. They had a linebacker right in between me and T.
You want to be on time, but not too early. Bang 8's a sharper angle on y'all's break, and we're throwing on a line.
Wow, what a throw.
Clemson downs Alabama 44-16.
It's just about taking advantage of that moment.
Perfect. Good job.
This kid, Trevor Lawrence, is a true freshman.
To be better than last year, that's always what it's going to be every year. And if I have a better year this year, it's going to be, well, what can you do next year? So there's always going to be next year. There's always going to be another year to try to prove myself. I think I'm getting there, but that's a lot. A lot to live up to, for sure.
Give me a little breakdown. Something
cool,
creative,
cool,
right? Cool. No QBs. We know that's what we are. Something with a little juice here. Let's go. No pressure. Trevor's watching. Let's go. Come on. Today. The camp ends Sunday.
All right.
3, 2.
Big Sexy's on 3. 1, 2, 3.
Big Sexy's. All right. Good job. Good job. Phil General's next.
Lawrence certainly a part of the Heisman conversation. Now time for our Nissan Heisman preview. Latest odds have 7 quarterbacks among the top 8. Lawrence and Alabama's Tua Tagovailoa currently runaway favorites to take home the hardware. Jalen Hurts of Oklahoma near the top. The Sooners reportedly have won a couple of those Heismans recently. Georgia's DeAndre Swift, the only non-quarterback in the top 8 of those odds. Former Georgia quarterback Jacob Eason recently won the starting job at Washington. The guy he beat out, sophomore Jake Haener, decided to leave the program entirely. He backed up Jake Browning last season while Eason sat out for his transfer year. Dusty, the trend continues. What do you make of that decision and this trend?
Commonplace in college football in 2019. I mean, Jacob Eason transferred, as you just mentioned, to get there. So not crazy to think that Jake Haener, if he doesn't win the job, he's going to transfer. It also tells me, I think there was a bigger gap than what we were led to believe between those two quarterbacks. I think that they waited so long to make this announcement, like a lot of places do, to try to ensure that there wouldn't be that transfer, to make the competition seem like it was more than what it was. Because everybody I talked to that had anything to do with the Washington football program and was out there for Pac-12 media days were raving about the arm of Jake Eason, going all the way back to last year when he was the scout team player of the year for him. So I don't think this was very close. close. I think Hayner saw the writing on the wall, and it sounds like he's probably going to go to Fresno, a place he's going to sit out a year and have a couple years of eligibility, and Jeff Tedford, he'll be looking for a new quarterback. So it's just commonplace for quarterbacks in 2019, guys.
Yeah, Dusty, I'm glad you said that about the quarterback competition. Eerily reminiscent of what happened with Jalen Hurts and Tua Tagovailoa going into the season. We ultimately knew Tua would be the starter, but it feels like you want some of that insurance. And this is already the second quarterback Washington's had transfer this offseason. We saw North Carolina and Mississippi State have guys enter the transfer portal after losing jobs. And you're right, this is just the way the world is. And obviously a lot of people will cry foul in this because they want to see guys stick it out. And there's certainly some merit to that. But we can also then on the other end celebrate what we're going to see: two straight transfer quarterbacks win the Heisman Trophy and another with a chance in Jalen Hurts, Kelly Bryant getting ready to potentially make the Missouri Tigers contenders. There's good and bad that comes with every decision made, and this one at least opens up more talent to get on the field sooner than we've seen ever before.
If I were him, I would have stuck it out. At this point, it's already late in the game. Are you really better off leaving, looking for greener pastures, knowing that the games in some places have already been played? No. And I think that there's a big misconception around quarterbacks and parents of quarterbacks at the college level. Oh, you got to start 3 years in the bare minimum in order to get evaluated by NFL scouts. It's not accurate. Because if you look at Cam Newton, he was drafted first overall. Guy started 14 games in his career. Mitch Trubisky was drafted second overall. Guy started 14 games in his career. Kyler Murray, how many games did he start? 17. Got drafted first overall. So I think there's a huge misconception about playing early and developing. You can still get an awful lot better, even if you're not starting every Saturday. So if I were him, I would have stuck around. I would have sat through the season. I would have been that insurance policy, especially knowing that Jacob Eason has an injury history. Maybe I would have gone in. I've been one play away. And then I graduate in December and look for another destination potentially at the end of the season. But I just think it's short-sighted to go this late. It leaves your team in a really tough spot and all your former teammates in a really tough spot as well.
Yeah, we're kind of in this day and age. You want it now. Right? I don't want to have to wait, and I'm expected to start somewhere. That's the expectation, so let's go someplace else. You mentioned it, Dusty. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN college football reporter, saying that Fresno State appears to be the likely destination for Jake Haner. Speaking of the West Coast, Andrew Luck helped revitalize the Stanford Cardinal. We'll look back at his college career and react to his shocking retirement.
This Heisman Preview is brought to you by Nissan, premier partner of the Heisman Trophy.
How you doing, babe? You and I are in contact, okay? Oh, by the way, I'm a vegetarian. Now, there's one little thing that keeps me from just, you know, being a full-fledged vegetarian. I occasionally will order soup, and the soup will occasionally have a piece of, let's say, chicken. Okay, and if it was a big piece of chicken, I wasn't going to eat it. If it was a little piece of chicken, I said, okay, I'd eat it. And so I have made the designation flexitarian. Let me tell you about Kansas Rule. It took 3 minutes. The recruiting has never been done like we've done it in the SEC. And the facilities, they're ready to invest, I mean, in the facilities. Yeah, no, there's any question, Coach. How do you see Chip Lindsey?
Episodes 1-4 of the new ESPN Plus original series, Miles to Go, Less Miles in Kansas Football, will be available starting Thursday exclusively with Big 12 Now on ESPN Plus. Less Miles, just one of many men making their debuts with new programs this week. North Carolina isn't new to Mack Brown. The former Texas coach makes his return to Chapel Hill, where he was the head coach from 88 to 1997. Dana Holgorsen has said he didn't know who Houston was facing opening week until after he took the job. Not that it would have necessarily changed his decision. Sunday in Norman, see Holgorsen's debut with the Cougars and Jalen Hurts' debut with Oklahoma. Greg, start with you. Which coaching debut intrigues you the most?
It has to be Mac Brown. He's the one that, to me, is playing in the most intriguing game. Okay, Dana Holgorsen, but we've seen Houston, Oklahoma before. We have North Carolina, South Carolina with Mac Brown, a late 60-year-old Matt Brown, out there with a true freshman quarterback trying to reinvigorate a program that has always been classified as a sleeping giant. I'm so glad he's back, and I think college football is better with him on the sideline, that's for sure. So Mac Brown against South Carolina, that's one I have to watch on Saturday.
I'm going to Lawrence, Kansas, man, and I don't necessarily mean for this game, but for the season. Les Miles is back in college football, man. This is great. I mean, the only person who could maybe be as entertaining, intriguing as him is Mike Leach. So we get Les Miles back. He's going to be chewing grass. Who knows what he's going to say in a press conference, which I can't wait for. And, hey, the guy's actually a really good football coach. He changed the culture at Oklahoma State. He won a national title at LSU. If he can just get Kansas off the mat, it will be a heck of a job. Either way, I can't wait to watch.
I've got a Kansas game week two on ESPN Plus. Looking forward to that production meeting. But the game I got to watch and the head coach I'm looking forward to is Mike Locksley at Maryland. This is a guy who we forget before Alabama was 3-31 as a head coach between New Mexico and his time as the interim head coach in Maryland. He goes through that Alabama coaching rehabilitation program down there and comes out on the other side with a strong appearance as a play caller there and a good bit of public back and forth with Josh Gattis about it, who's now the offensive coordinator at Michigan. So can he revitalize a Maryland program that has been down in the dumps really since the Edsel era through now?
Locksley, the new head coach at Maryland. You know, he used to play quarterback at Maryland was Frank Reich. Now he's the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts. See, we did that segue there. We connected those dots. It was a stretch, but we did it. He thought he was going to have Andrew Luck as his quarterback this year. That changed on Saturday as Luck announced his retirement after playing six full seasons in the NFL. He cited the mental and physical toll the sport took on him, saying it was impacting his happiness. He turns 30 next month. In his 3 years as a starter at Stanford, Luck ended up ranking first in career passing touchdowns and completion percentage while leading the Cardinal to a 23-3 record in his final two seasons. So, Greg, he's retired. It shocked everyone. Now that we've had a couple of days to think about it, what's your reaction?
I'm sad because I'm going to miss watching him play. I mean, he really was. Even dating back to his time at Stanford, he was one of my favorite players to watch. How professional he approached the game, how cerebral he was, how accurate he was, and how sneaky athletic Andrew was. So Drew and I, we roomed together at the Manning Passy Academy. He's a good friend. And I'm glad. I'm proud of him for making this decision. I really am, because I know it's a hard one. He's walking away from potentially $500 million in contract over the next 10 or 12 years, but he's citing happiness, and if football is not fulfilling his every need and desire, then look elsewhere for what it is you are trying to create. So I'm proud of him, but I will miss him, especially as a player, because he was so incredibly special.
Take you guys back to 2008, the U.S. Army All-American game. I'm sitting in the tunnel waiting to go out on the field, and this big, tall, goofy kid comes up to me and goes, "Hey, I think our dads played together for the Houston Oilers." And he had this big, deep voice, and I was like, "Who is this guy?" And I watched him go on to become only the most heralded quarterback prospect coming out of college since John Elway, and later on go on to do unbelievable things in the pro ranks. I am sad like Greg, but I'm excited to watch this guy embrace whatever life has next for him. He's an unbelievably talented football player, a hard-nosed guy, but seems like an even better human being. A lot of great things still to come for him.
Yeah, I've always been a huge fan. You know, I like the fact that he's a quarterback with a linebacker's mentality, right? I mean, you remember when this guy would throw an interception? Watch out if you were the defender. He was going to come get you. And maybe to the point early on in his career, he was going to try to run a linebacker or a safety over. I don't know if that's compiled onto some of these injuries. The offensive line was abysmal. The ironic part is, this is the best team he's had around him, the best offensive line, and that's when his body's really failing him. Look, I had five surgeries in five seasons. I can tell you what that's like to go through the pain of an injury, rehab back, have to deal with all that. It's not just a physical toll, it's a mental toll. So I really do feel and salute Andrew Luck, because life is football, but life is also about health and happiness, and I hope Andrew Luck finds that.
Greg, what is that like? You know, you played the position. What's that like when you realize you've hit the wall, that's it, and I need to give up this game that I've played a majority of my life?
Well, I would say that my career and Andrew Luck's career are a little bit different, but we do have
trying to help you out.
Fair enough. We do have a few key similarities. I remember the NFL just became not fun for me. Like, I genuinely, after leaving college, I genuinely didn't appreciate just how special college football was. I'd get to the NFL, and it was individuals that happened to be a part of a team and put on the same uniform on Sunday. But once that game was over on Sunday, everyone go their separate ways. And I dealt with injuries, too. And I know Dusty had and Golic had as well. I mean, you deal with injuries, and it just takes the fun away from the game. You appreciate so much your time spent in college and even high school before that, because it really was special to be a part of a team. That gets lost on you a little bit throughout the NFL. So I can see the fun being sucked from the game for Andrew, but I also know that he has a tremendous appreciation for his teammates. I know he has a tremendous appreciation for the Colts organization, but it's had to have been an absolutely impossible decision to make. Like we said already, I'm very proud of him for making it, and I know that whatever comes in his life in the future is going to be extremely fulfilling.
When Luck showed up on campus, Stanford had never won more than 10 games in a season. He won 12 games in 2010, yeah. 11 games in 2011, really helped establish that program, along with, of course, head coach Jim Harbaugh and then David Shaw. Coming up next here on College Football Live, it's hard to upstage Mike Golic Jr. A high school football coach was able to do just that. Gojo's going to explain that straight ahead.
Have you ever seen me do any crazy things? Crazy things?
No way!
No, sir! Crazy things?
This is freaking business! Freaking business!
I know you're crazy!
Crazy things?
I think the game will be close, so close to hard.
Closer, close, 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 much closer.
Crazy things? Crazy things?
I know you're crazy!
Crazy things?
This is freaking business!
We are glad to have you with us on College Game Day.
Saturday, college football is back on ABC. Heisman hopeful Justin Herbert, number 11 Oregon, square off against number 16 Auburn from AT&T Stadium in Arlington. 7:30 Eastern, 4:30 Pacific. You can always watch it live on the ESPN app from anywhere. If you were watching football on ESPN Saturday afternoon, there's a good chance you saw Biff Poggi, the head coach of St. Francis, donning the sleeveless shirt, informing everyone where the gun show was located that weekend. Mike Golic Jr. worked sidelines for that game. You interviewed him. You powered through the sideline interview. Did you do push-ups? Sneak in some before you did that?
Snuck in some push-ups there. Listen, I had to do something to compete with this guy on screen. Biff Poggi, yeah. Larger than life in so many ways, but going suns out, guns down, the cut down the middle, soaking wet in that South Florida heat. He dressed for the occasion, and I only felt bad that clearly I was the overdressed one, which almost never happens in my life.
Is that a trend epic. Center
I mean,
thing?
Seriously.
I mean, do I need to start
that is epic.
Chopping off my sleeves?
It's unbelievable. What I think is hilarious is, like, we have all these innovative technologies when it comes to, like, fabric nowadays. And no, he's going pure bona fide cotton, as sweaty as can be. Like, that was impressive stuff that you held it together, Golic. It really was. Dusty, yeah, would you
no,
pull
Mike,
that off?
No, Mike. No.
I would definitely rock that. I mean, hey, I got no problem with that. I can cut sleeves off. I can put a little V-neck in all my T-shirts. I have a sweaty mess half the time, so if that's going to help, you know, my perspiration problems, I'm with Coach Poggi, man. Let's go.
If some coaches are out there watching, like maybe a Mike Gundy, he might be getting an idea or two for this season. That's College Football Live. Thanks, guys.